This is our second session on the Bible and the newspaper. Yesterday we did some broad scanning of the Bible, and today we're going to do some broad scanning of the newspaper, remembering that from my perspective, the Bible without the newspaper is unfaithful. To read the Bible without reading the newspaper is to be unfaithful. To read the newspaper without reading the Bible is to be unfaithful. And the newspaper, of course, is just a word that points to the world in which we live. I'm not suggesting that the truth is in a newspaper about the world in which we live, or that you can really find what you need in the newspaper, but the newspaper at least points to the concrete stuff of life, what it is that's going on. God appears to us in the concrete stuff of life, but so much depends upon the perspective with which you appropriate, on the basis of which you experience the concrete. We've learned so much about how your eyes, your whole being, your personal being, your class being, your historical being, your national being influences what you perceive and how you interpret what you perceive. So that we have to deal with the broad perspective of our perceptions as well as with the concrete stuff. So let me just summarize a little. Yesterday, I really worked on yesterday, and before the your stay here is out, I will have a piece of paper to you, several pieces probably, but one in which I really summarize. See, I've got a lot more stuff today than I had yesterday on what the Bible says. But what I was suggesting, broadly speaking, that the Bible says that we begin with God. We begin with God's intention for the creation. We begin with the universe, God's universe. And the alternative is to begin with yourself and your feelings, remember, with your aches and pains and your this and that and your pleasures and what you think you need. The alternative is to begin with oneself, or the second alternative is to begin with one's society, with what one's society wants or demands or needs, what one has been socialized into being on the basis of one's societies, things that are useful to the functioning social system, which is a whole school of sociology that begins there. And of course there's a whole school, particularly of economics, which begins with how you happen to feel and what you want and what I call the small self, the self that's concerned about making money and having things and having power and having status for oneself. And the third alternative, which I was rejecting yesterday, which is a better alternative, is to begin with some sense of what you as an individual ought to be. And I think we Christians are frequently tempted to begin with what we think we as an individual ought to be, more or less without regard to the whole, to the universe, to the historical period, to what God is saying and doing and kind of urging us, persuading us in all kinds of ways to be for the universe given our particular period of history. Now it's very clear, to me at least, that what's happened in Eastern Europe was bound to happen. It was just a matter of time, because what was happening in Eastern Europe violated the very stuff of life. And you will see by Friday, when's the last day, that I think what we're doing is violate in this country is violating the very stuff of life. But that's a long, long story. So we begin with the God who creates the whole universe. And the whole universe is created with intention. So we are intended to be, in the context of the whole universe, something. And remember I said that there was a, that whole could be static, and therefore what was required could be a kind of static, or it could be dynamic. Now I believe that God's intention for us is an intention which takes into account what's happened in history. So the intention for the East, the so-called socialist East, was to move in the direction of freedom as self-initiation. The intention of God for us today, I think, is to move in the direction of freedom as self-perfection, or freedom as seeking the good, not really free. People who talk about being really free. And the whole history of thought is just strewn with these differences in the word freedom. So that what I was saying yesterday is that God intended something for the whole universe, and that intention has to be seen in the light of what is happening, so that what needs to be doing, what we need to be doing now is historical. It's both essential in the sense that there's a created intention, and it's historical in the light of what has happened. We begin with God the Creator. We say no to these other ways of looking at reality, other places to start, really. And if you start in those places, you just inevitably end in certain places. Second, I said that essentially, as created, we are parts of each other. Whether or not we feel we are parts of each other, whether or not we act as if we are parts of each other, in our deepness, in our created intentionality, we are parts of each other. And to some extent, we remain parts of each other. And the purpose is to become more parts of each other. And we read that passage from 1 Corinthians 12. So our purpose is to seek to fulfill that created intention and to meet the needs of the neighbor such a way as to move toward creating the needs of everyone. And the kind of self that it takes to move in this direction is the kind of self that forgets the self, I mean, which prioritizes the whole as over against the self, or which becomes the big self. I like to think of it as the big self, the self whose very being is interrelated and concerned with, sympathetic with, identified with the whole universe, so that you fulfill yourself, you get your joy out of that connection. It isn't a selflessness. I think frequently we talk about getting rid of the self, and then we get all the reaction of the psychologists say, well, if you don't love yourself, you can't love anybody else. And you know that that's to a certain extent true. If you don't have any respect for yourself, it's going to be hard for you to have respect for other people. And we could go into that, but I'm sure Jim could go into that better than I can with his history. He was telling me that he found, trying to deal with children, that you had to deal with the whole family. He thought, maybe I can do more for the world by beginning with children. He discovered that the whole family, and if we pushed him a little, he would say, the whole neighborhood, the whole culture, the television, the whole shebang is involved in the life of children. Well, that's enough to kind of repeat or get us up to date. And today we're going to talk about the newspaper. We're going to talk about what it is you think needs doing. What is going on in the world? Before we do that, let's pray. Oh God, whisper to us. Whisper to us. Whisper to us through the voices that speak. Whisper to us through the winds that blow. Whisper to us through the mountains that inspire us. Whisper to us through the animals that surround us. Whisper to us as we seek to find what you are saying to us. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. So what some of you are going to write it out or think about it or share with us what you thought was the newspaper was saying to you, or what life was saying to you about what needed doing, or what was wonderful about what was happening, or something that was going on out in the world, so we can connect with this Bible, connect with it. Barbara said this morning that she had a different view of the Bible and its politics than I do, and we may well have a different view, because I don't believe you can be faithful unless you deal with the political life and think about it and participate in it, the whole life. Politics is simply a word in Aristotle for the whole of society, for our relations with each other. Yes.
I
need a scribe too.
We know more about what's wrong with the world today than we ever have done before. We're more concerned for the rest of the world and its problems, but at the same time, we are working more for each other. There are more voluntary societies. There are more groups in aid of, in defense of, and so on and so forth. And America has more of those than any other country.
Would someone describe? I hate to put pressure on. If I'm trying to be, I have a hard time. So you're saying that one of the things you observe in your experience through news is the participation of Americans in voluntary societies on behalf of people.
They talk about the global village, and it's really true. It's becoming true. We know more about each other's misfortunes, and yet we're trying harder on behalf of each other.
So we're more involved worldwide with each other.
Yeah.
And the voluntary society means we're involved in trying to do something about it. Voluntary societies, whole theory about voluntary societies. Jim Adams, incidentally,
I think the word struggle expresses an awful lot of what is happening. People are struggling for freedom, struggling for living, and it's a struggle of making themselves whole and getting something that's worthwhile.
Worldwide is awfully good. A lot of us are only working worldwide.
So we are what we are. We're more aware of our need to struggle. Are you saying people are more aware of their own needs to become more? We certainly got a lot of psychological work going on in the world, in this country at least, counseling. It's hard to get people to stay in the ministry these days. They go into counseling. If you have troubles with the ministry, you become a counselor. Although they say, I was reading a piece in the paper the other day, I don't know whether I got it on the stuff here or not, that the psychiatrists, the expensive psychiatrists, are lacking in clients. The cheaper psychologists are getting the clients. Is that right, Jim?
That's right.
Jim was a professional psychologist, so I keep pointing to him.
It used to be in 1940, there was a movement afoot that perceived a coming truth thing, and it was called the one world theory, that we live in one world. Well, I think that it's closer to us today, And I would change it to one neighborhood. It no longer, a world concept is too wide. It really is coming so that that your neighbor knows the same news that you know by evening. And so I would call it, I would change his name and call it One Neighborhood. We're coming, becoming.
We're becoming One Neighborhood.
One Neighborhood.
I think John Donne's No Man Is an Island expresses it better than any newspaper I've ever read, that if a pebble is washed away from the shore, it diminishes part of us.
You're, it's another way of saying we belong to each other. We yes, participate we in each other. No man is an island. No, they'll get their language straight someday. No person is an island.
would interdependence be a capture that?
Well, it's more than interdependence. It's interrelated, I think, is a dependence. It's better than independent, but...
Interrelated.
Interconnected.
Now, I don't know about your newspaper, but ours, the primary issue is crime, drugs, and gangs.
Abortion.
Crime, drugs. Abortion.
Violence of all forms.
Violence.
Greed.
I preached a sermon not long ago on not needing to destroy somebody. Violence. I was talking about personal violence. Not the kind of violence out in the community, but the interrelatedness of people. Who I developed a whole theory in relation
abuse.
To it's not abuse. It's the people who have to destroy you and have to appear to know have all the answers. And when I was working for PUSH, these women treated me as a boy, and they treated all the black ministers as boys, and they had to have all the answers, and they couldn't admit your being. They really were needing to, I thought they were needing to destroy somebody. That's the way I perceived it, and they were so vicious in their criticism of everybody. Anyway, the whole theory there, but... I think we're talking about more of the external homicides and suicides and criminal crimes.
I may have misunderstood the assignment yesterday. But
no wrong, no wrong.
What
or right.
Kind of the newspaper means to me is first you have to be wary because it may not be saying what's really true. Second, that an awful lot of people in the world don't care about other people or the world. Then there are some people who care very much and enough to do something about it. And then a lot of trivia.
You mean that's what the newspaper
says? That's what the newspaper says to me.
A lot of trivia. Well, there's a lot of triviality in the world.
True.
The question is, what's the character of the world that's portrayed? And you're saying you the character of the world is a caring world. It goes back to that first comment. That
a lot of it is uncaring as well.
Uncaring. I don't think the newspapers tell much about the good things that people are doing, for the most part. And maybe that's just what I look for.
No, I think it's there. That's
and clip out.
That's the headline.
I mean, the savings and loans are going in the hole. Every single day you read about this, somebody running off of this bad judgment, and what is it, $500 billion they now figure it's going to take to bail out the savings and loans.
And the banks are going to be next, I read. They're just not talking about that one yet.
Or insurance companies. I think the newspapers point out that there's a lot of leisure time. Otherwise, how would people have so much time to do voluntary work or get in trouble or take a position in something else?
It,
used to be you worked 6 days a week, and if you were lucky, you got to work 6 days a week. You didn't have time or energy or money to do anything else, but now there's all those resources are available to people, so they can be better read, they can form opinions. Television is a quick fix for a lot of it. They have all kinds of leisure time to suddenly come to the surface and be seen and be heard. And the newspapers and other communication media are all sources or means of providing this information. So the more people out there trying to express
it. Well, as you know, I think that to be faithful, one has to attend to something significant. I don't see too much up here yet. There are a few things you could attend to. But what is it that's going on that needs attending to? Homeless, homeless, hungry,
lonely.
Forgetting the children.
All around the world, the children are getting a lot of abuse. They're just forgetting that they're the leaders of tomorrow. They're just not doing anything.
Oh, we don't fund the leaders of tomorrow. We don't. How many gifted programs have you contributed to? How many handicapped programs have you contributed to? That's a rather harsh indictment. People don't like to say it or don't like to hear it. But the person who has a gift to give and needs it trained needs as much help as anyone.
Somebody whispered.
The parable of the talents.
Well, what are the rest of the here?
I have a little trouble with this saying that that's the greatest need. I think if somebody's hungry, that's a greater need than somebody than training somebody to be the leader for tomorrow. If you want to put things on scale. I'm not saying that is a need.
So you'd put hunger.
See, the basic
hunger is a very basic issue.
Some of the basic human needs.
Just underline hungry. Why don't we just? That's kind of in a priority. You put that toward the top.
I would if I had to choose. Yeah.
You can add terrorism and pollution.
Beg your pardon?
Terrorism and pollution. I mean, you had a whole long list of those, but I wiped them out.
You wiped them out?
Yeah, I wiped them out. I said we were all sharing each other's problems, and they were all on that list.
Well, you got one or two of mine. I got a list of 11. But I'm not going to give them to you yet. Students in my class always say, we'd read a book together and I'd have it all outlined and they'd have to read it. And then I'd ask them what he was saying or why they were saying what they said. They'd constantly say, why don't you just give it to us? Of course, they wouldn't have to think or work or do anything. AIDS, yeah.
About waste.
We got a member of our community. I think he's dead. He's dying last I heard of AIDS. You pardon?
Waste.
Yeah, waste is.
You mean like?
Waste. Garbage. Let's say
the
garbage,
waste.
Right?
Waste of all things.
Waste of all things.
All things.
Overconsumption of Americans.
Overconsumption.
Particularly Americans.
Beg pardon? I heard ecology?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're getting close to me. Ecology. That's right. Forget that.
Health.
Health.
Politicians. What's the problem with politicians?
I think Will Rogers was quoted once as saying that they ought to have a chaplain of the Congress And his purpose is to get up there and open a session with a prayer for Congress, and he takes a look at Congress and he prays for the people. One thing the newspapers have done have kept us more current on what our people in Congress aren't doing, and now they're talking about cutting out programs and raising taxes.
But it's a very mixed bag. It's a very mixed bag in Congress.
Well, they haven't been taking very good care of our money. I think they've been poor poor handlers or stewards of our money.
My congressperson is the salt of the earth. I've known him for 30 years. I worked very closely with him. And, he's an old labor leader, just the salt of the earth. So, I mean, he's always on the right side, of course. He's on my side. His votes. He's right, votes straight the way I would vote. Well, anybody else really want to? I know you've got a lot of ideas here. I see some right in the back there.
I don't think we have poverty per se down there.
Almost hungry.
Which are part of it. Yeah.
Big one.
Yeah, poverty.
The greater difference between the haves and the have-nots.
Haves and the have-nots. Yeah, it's,
trade deficits?
Trade deficit.
Budget deficit.
Budget deficit. Haves and the have-nots. We haven't quite got that up there yet.
Race relations?
Race relations. Spent 30 years in race relations. You're getting into my territory. Haves and the have-nots. The world is really being divided into the haves and the have-nots, I would say. And it will increasingly be divided into the haves and the have-nots. Poor nations are going to get poorer,
topic of a movie tonight, Romero, Haves and Have-Nots.
The poem of death, third world. Between 1970 and 1990, Latin America and the Caribbean, the debt went up from 27.9 to 420.2 billion. That's south of the border. That's region one. That's our most important area in some way for our relations with the world, is south of the border.
That's this line here, this one?
That's that first line.
It shoots way up and the rest of them don't.
Not so fast. A good deal of that money is owed to us. And Bread for the World says we ought to forgive the debt. I'll just use that as illustration. The others are going up. Africa is North Africa and the Middle East, that's number four. That hasn't gone up so much. Two is East Asia and the Pacific. But that's the thing that should concern us. And I'm a little concerned that we haven't mentioned population explosion. Can you see that at all? Look at Mexico. I want to look at Mexico. Can you see Mexico? Present 88 population, 83 million. Expected to be 187 million before they level off, before the boom in their population stops. Can you imagine what the Rio Grande is going to be like with 187 million people in Mexico? You talk about the Berlin Wall. We'll have a stronger wall than the Berlin Wall.
About two-thirds of them will be in our country, right?
Well, they will be trying to get here.
They'll do it.
Well, I think all our ideas about freedom and being, give me your poor, your taunts, what is it, tempest tossed, and we'll go out the window. All our notions about caring for the poor, especially you in California and Washington and this West Coast where they're coming across, and right up the coast, don't they come?
67% of the babies are illegal aliens.
I mean, now we're beginning to talk about some real stuff. And it's the same with the rest of the countries. By 2040, the population of the world is supposed to double. 10 billion people. 10 billion people. You've got that overpopulation. I don't know whether, I wouldn't put over it, but explosion. If you put over, it means that you're, look, I was going to pull it off of there. If you get over, then it means that somehow it's wrong, and maybe it is wrong, but it's certainly an explosion that is creating all kinds of problems. Is the debt. I just picked out a few of these. I've got all kinds of stuff. But this is another one that I think should give us some pause. Military expenditures. The developed countries' military expenditures and foreign economic aid. One of the most crucial things in the world is the third world or developing nations' economic development. Crucial things in the world. If the third world becomes 8 billion, about 8 billion or more out of the 10 billion in the world, and they're increasingly without resources, if you think terrorism is something now, what are frustrated millions of people as you see their babies dying and our whole military expenditure could be said to be just completely out of balance in relationship to what's important. And then you will get the argument, of course, that if we don't protect ourselves from the Russians, there won't be any world anyway. One of you mentioned race. I'll just do a couple of little things here on race. This is the percentage of jobless among men aged 25 to 54, 1954 through 88. And the top is the non-white, which would be chiefly Hispanic and African Americans. And the bottom would be white. The discrepancy between the employment. The discrepancy is also there in the income. The amount of income that blacks would get is over against whites. The last 10 years, I think it's increased from about $54 a month to $83 a month in terms of their income. Well, why don't I just run down a few more so that we get the picture a little, as I see the picture, and actually This is not just off the top of my head. When I came to Holden in September, I outlined the issues that I thought were important in the world. And I have them here by order of my preference. You might want to just sketch it in on the side. First, the environment. We have a video that sketches in what's happening to the climate in terms of global warming. And this particular video takes a very strange tack. Says that with the global warming, the equator is going to warm more than any other place. Naturally, it's hotter, the sun is hotter, it's more direct there. There'll be water evaporated from the ocean, form clouds, temperature differential between the poles and the equator will increase, the winds will circulate. We haven't seen anything compared with the hurricanes they predict. As this continues in the next 40 or 50 years. The water will be carried in the clouds to the North Pole, be deposited, and within 10 years, the next ice age will begin. That's a whole new thing. I haven't read that anywhere. Although some years ago, the daughter of the person who's propagating this theory came to see me. And she came to see Jesse, and she got shifted to me. So I went to a few meetings. But their whole theory is that we have, and everybody agrees, I think, there are 90-year periods of cold and 90,000-year periods of cold, 10,000-year periods of warming, and we're about at the end of that 10,000 years, and that there's a period of about 20 years in which the change takes place gradually. Or rapidly. What they've done is to dig down into sediments and find the kind of pollen that's there and the kind of vegetation that has that pollen, and they can tell that the kind of climate that would have that kind of vegetation. So the theory is that we're really toward the end of that, and we could push it up the period for glaciation. Now, whether or not you take that approach, or you take the approach of all the people I've been reading since September, that global warming is going to warm everything from 5 degrees to 30 degrees Fahrenheit by 2100. From 5 degrees to 30. Now, the difference in the temperatures, they say, is only about 3 degrees between the ice age and the warming periods. So if you get 5 degrees change, you are getting a tremendous. But if you get more than 5 degrees, you are going to change the whole climate and all the growing seasons and the growth patterns. They say the wheat will move up into Canada and the hurricanes. And anyway, there's a book by Stephen Schneider, Global Warming, and there are several other books which students of this. They say that the problem is carbon dioxide and the chlorofluorocarbons, chiefly. That we have to get rid of the carbon, we have to cut down on the carbon dioxide. And both the people who think we're going toward the ice age and we're going toward the inferno in terms of heat, think we got to get rid of the carbon dioxide. They made all these studies, and I'll show you the diagrams probably tomorrow, indicating the correlation between temperature and the amount of carbon dioxide in this blanket up above in the stratosphere. So I don't want to really get into that a lot today, but only to indicate that the reason it's the number one problem is we won't have a place to live. Our children won't have, our grandchildren won't have a place to live that's not fraught with all kinds of problems globally. This is a global problem. It's not an individual problem. It's not a national problem. Everybody. Brazil, because of the burning of its forests, gives off 337, who knows how they know that, tons of carbon dioxide a year. Now the total we're giving off is about 5 billion tons, so 337 is quite a bit. And we give off about 1,300,000,000 tons of carbon dioxide a year in the United States. You know, what percentage of the population are we? 4.6. I figured out the other day. So that, my judgment is we need to cut our carbon dioxide about 90%. Think of cutting coal and oil and gas and natural gas 90%. Everybody says 20, they're going after 20%. Toronto has declared its goal is 20% and has accepted it. Some of the European nations have accepted 20%. So that's the reason I put the environment as the number one problem. That unless we do something about the environment, all the rest of it, in a sense, it probably won't affect our existence, but it'll certainly affect our children's and our children's children. Poverty, I put as the second issue. I think I may have said yesterday, 1.2 billion people in the world in absolute poverty. 40,000 people died today, yesterday 40,000, because of poverty and related diseases, hunger-related diseases. And it's going to get worse. If the population doubles and the resources in these countries are just not there to deal with this, and I only picked out one here, and that's the fuel problem. Third world is chiefly dependent on wood. Half of our forests, our tropical forests, are gone. Half of our tropical forests are already gone. And these nations, tropical Africa, by 2000, the acute scarcity or deficit will be for 622 million people. And the total area you can see in tropical Africa, Asia, tropical America is 2,398,000,000 people will not have enough to cook with, enough wood to cook with. And this just shows you the wood share of total energy use. Some places 92, 96, 71, 82, 74. Asia, not quite so high. Indonesia, 50. So that the problem of poverty and the land distribution problems are also large in these countries. So that what they're doing in these countries is to cut down the forests in order to get a piece of land. And there are a lot of them on the hillsides, and the soil erodes, and it doesn't last very long, and then they go out and cut another piece down. But they're being pushed into destroying the tropical forests. So the second problem is poverty. Third problem I put down is the relations of the United States and the USSR. That's a little iffy, but and that is changing because of what's happened in the USSR, but still, why do we have this big military budget? Why do we spend all our resources on the military instead of on our social programs and on our own people? Incidentally, in our own country, the poverty, a fifth of our children live in poverty, 32 million people in this country living in poverty. Poverty is increasing in this country. It's increased over the last 20 years. Why do we spend all those resources? Because it's our fear of Russia. I can't figure out any other way. Now, maybe that's not the right answer, but so that our, yes?
It may not be a justifiable fear, it may never have been. We have many people in this country who profit greatly by exploiting that fear, beginning with the generals and the admirals and on down in the military establishment, but also in the makers of munitions and all of the equipment used by them. I think if we didn't have Russia as the official enemy, we'd probably switch back to China, which was once our official enemy. And if we couldn't do that, we'd figure out a way of making some other part of the world.
You're right, Dayton, but we vote for them. We vote for our Congress, which has to approve these budgets.
But we don't have any lobbyists for ourselves, not like the munitions factories.
Oh, they certainly do have the lobbies and the money. They were telling me once that by the time they got out of one congressional hearing on an issue, they had printouts of all the arguments against the arguments that had been negative so far as, I don't know whether it was the energy, I think it was the energy group, the oil and the car manufacturers. They'd had their computer working during the session, and by the time it was over, they had the printout to give the arguments against. I mean, you've got a tremendous lobby, you're right. But we could still, if the people protested. But you're right, I mean, the people with the money and resources can have an undue influence. Racism, I've got, is the fourth issue. And
can I ask a question?
Yes.
Has anybody ever proposed what it costs us to have a Congress, the stewards of our money, the stewards of our military, as opposed to military defense? What sort of ratio is there between the cost of having a Congress
and having the military?
Nobody ever, the newspapers never.
Okay.
Is that a sign from God?
I do fear.
Yeah.
You can watch it. Was that a just right next to her?
Pardon?
Ball next to her?
Well, it hit her head.
It did?
I didn't see it.
Yes, it was.
Or
does anybody know what? I don't know what the congressional budget is for.
All I know is he's overpaid.
No, I mean, but what the real budget is compared to the military? $300 billion. It can't be. I don't think it can be $1 billion.
When you start thinking about pensions and that sort of thing,
yeah.
When they voted themselves the raise, we were talking about that today, and I said, they gave up their $10,000 for making the speech. They have to pay income tax on that. So for giving up something that they have to pay income tax on, they got a raise. And with Senator Tower, who his pension is $89,000 a year, what are the rest of them going to be getting? I mean, the yearly, their pay is not the big thing. It's what happens to the pension. It goes on and on and on.
Well, do we want to say that one of the crucial things we should attend to is the cost of our Congress?
We pay them to do a job. And everybody knows with the SNL thing and the HUD and everything else that somebody has not been doing their job. But their pay goes right on. And the pay raise goes right on.
Well, now be careful. These problems aren't simple problems. You push in one direction and you'll find, and you can make a case for some things. You just need to be careful. They're complex problems.
We're talking about stewardship, aren't we?
We can talk about stewardship.
Well, somebody mentioned here a few minutes ago, we don't have a PAC to represent us, and yet I'd ask the rhetorical question of when did you last write in Congress? I think we've proven that you can make a difference if you go to that kind of trouble. I was reading an article this morning about Barbara Bush, and apparently she does a lot of things behind the scenes, hospital aid and that sort of thing. It doesn't get much publicity, but And she was made, she made the comment, they asked her, she gave this story about this little kid about walking on the beach with his grandfather. And the beach was littered with starfish. And he'd pick them up, the little kid would pick them up and throw them in the ocean. The grandfather said, "Why are you doing that? That won't do any good." And he says, "Well, it will to this one," and threw another one in the water. And I think that's where we have to start, you know, start writing to these people in Washington, you know, some opinions.
They always answer our letters very nicely, but nothing is done about it because we don't have the money to fund their campaigns.
Well, let me tell you that our church organized itself to change the policy, not the whole church, but a group of the church, change the policy of our government toward Central America. I'm not sure that we've changed it, but we did everything. We went to visit our congresspeople. Our congressperson was on the right side, and one of our senators was on the right side. We sat in the office of the other one. We paraded around the office building. We bannered the outer drive. We went to Washington. We organized, we picketed. We did every conceivable thing, not alone, but in connection with some others. And as I've said, we have the assistant to the Bishop of El Salvador, the Lutheran Bishop of El Salvador, came out of this group. We've had 23 people in our church in Central America. We've accompanied refugees back to their countries. We have a $25,000 a year budget to hire somebody to work on this, all out of this little church of 200. You say, you know, we focused on one issue, and we worked. And we've had two sanctuary families from Guatemala. My wife has been in Guatemala and Nicaragua. It became a kind of focus. And who knows, you know, when that kind of pressure organized among a lot of churches, there are churches in Seattle that are working in the same direction and that have tried to push this way. Now, of course you can get into a lot of trouble if you do this in a church, if your church doesn't want to go along with it. But we had a study group, we worked hard, we got out a position paper, we took a vote in the church on some of this stuff, and certainly for the sanctuary family, we had a church vote to have the church I think you got to organize groups of people that are focused on one of these issues. You can't take all the issues, or you don't know enough, or you can't push hard enough, I think. But if you focus on one of these issues, you get a group. We've also got a group that's now going to Russia to try to, I don't know whether that's going to work. We'll have a group, we've had a little bit of a group on the environmental issues. When I get back, you can bet your boots we're going to do something on the environmental issues. And we've worked on the nuclear issue quite a bit. We're a nuclear weapons-free zone. The church voted to be a nuclear weapons-free zone. One woman who just spends her time on Russia, and she's a retired professor, and they've found life, really. You can't believe what's happened for some people because they've taken one of these issues. It's got to be systematic, and churches now, the Lutherans are doing a lot. If you read the Lutheran material, they're working on this stuff nationally. But the problem is the local congregation. I don't believe that national bodies can do very much. I think it's the local congregation that's got to get itself organized and informed and active and related. I believe in getting policy and connection. That is to get connected with the problem, to really begin to penetrate it, as Jim was saying. You've got to get involved in the nuts and bolts and the complexity, and that takes a mite of doing. But I am free now, and have been free to, and I've been focusing on poverty for the last few years, to focus. Anyway, let me go on. I just want to get over these, so at least we are, sexism, I haven't heard anyone, I certainly find that in our church, that's a very, very, and up here too, that's a very crucial issue. In fact, we have a committee at Holden Village on equal opportunity. And right now, they formulated a policy, and they're going to present it to the board of directors of Holden, because there's a feeling that the women are left out here of all the key spots, or most of the key spots. And they can do the laundry, and they can do the cooking, and they can do the housekeeping, but to do carpentry and plumbing and electricity and the things that have a kind of status. Anyway, sexism, drugs, we've got drugs on here. Education, now I think education is a very crucial problem. I think the substance of education is very, very critical, and I could spend a lot of time, since I've spent my life in education, I have a lot of notions about it. And we've got an elementary teacher here now who's been in elementary education for 24 years. He said he couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't do anything for the students. They come out of homes that don't support them, and he was just lost. He just felt betrayed not only by the homes and by the background of the kids, but betrayed by the administration of the school in terms of what it expected. Expected reports and paper, and at any rate.
We don't have any discipline, and they don't have any control. How can we teach them children to be out of control?
Well, I went into the school of a member of our church in a lower class area, and she had discipline. She's a black woman. She's now a district superintendent. She worked at it. She would call up the parents. She would go visit them as the principal. She worked at it. So I know it can be done, but I know it isn't easy. The gay lesbian issue, I don't know where you are on that, but it's practically torn our church apart. It really didn't tear our church apart, but it's likely to now that we decided as a church to ordain gays and lesbians in our church. So that now the reaction is setting in, and I don't know what's going to happen. Aging, that's another problem for us. Some of us more than others.
Nobody's exempt.
That's one universal problem we have in this room, at least. All right, nuclear weapons. I've got way down low, and in one sense, it's as frightening and as devastating to be able to destroy the universe, have that power. I don't think we ought to have the power. I think it was an act of unfaithfulness to ever manufacture those bombs, and abortion. So those are the issues in kind of the order I've made them for myself. And now I really believe, and tomorrow I'm really going to talk about the environment as the number one issue. And I think all of us can do some things, and you may notice that I've got something on the shelf there as you go in the dining room on the left. 107 things you can do. I just started to work on this. I'm Johnny come lately on it, but I've been convinced. It's all I've done since I got here in September is read and think and pray about it and talk about it and dream about it. And, I don't think I'm worrying about it yet, but attending to it. I think what we have a chance to do, and I'll speak a little about that on the last day, we have a chance to attend to one of these issues, really attend seriously. I've worked at this only since September, and while I haven't gotten into a lot, I think I'm beginning to appreciate what the problems are. There's a whole list. I have 12 different aspects of the They could list 12 separate problems, actually, in the ecological area. Overpopulation is one, certainly, because it's what's destroying the forests. Pollution. Pollution is unbelievable. We're poisoning. The stuff that's coming in from the third world has got pesticide residues on it, and some of those are carcinogens. Some of the testing that's been done in some of the states indicate that the food we're getting from this country have pesticide residues on it. They're carcinogen. We've only tested about 13% of the chemicals we use in this country. We don't even know what is toxic in this country. There's just a whole lot of issues in relation to the environment and the kind of what we're doing to the water and the air and the earth and above the climate. So I think God is saying something to us. And I think he's saying something. Pete, listen to me. Get shot in my church. God is saying something to us in all these issues. In all these issues. It's clear to me through the ecological issues than it is through the societal issues. But every single thing we've got up here is an issue in which God is saying something to us about the way we live together. About our whole beings. At least that's what I think. Though I don't know how you're feeling about it. Let's just talk for a little while and then quit. I didn't give you a break even.
I'd like to bring up one more thing and put it on that list maybe. And that is political arrest and torture and death. I'm a member of Amnesty. And if you know anything about Amnesty, they're very strong on writing letters and making their presence felt. I try very hard in churches in the Washington, D.C. area to cooperate, and I would astound you to find out that churches are not interested. They refuse to let you come in and talk, and even the synagogues have backed away. And it's very important to keep people from being arrested, thrown in jail without charge, without trial, torture. This is the issue that you're...
What would you call that? Political terrorism?
I was trying to think what the title is. Human rights?
We call it civil rights.
Okay, human rights.
Human rights, that's what we call it. Human rights, yeah. Okay. Human rights. Human rights issue.
And that's a worldwide issue.
Oh, that's... It's...
One on which the church has been an absolute coward. I can't understand how people who call themselves Christians can.
If you read the stories about the CIA and our participation in those human rights violations in some of these countries, that's the only thing I read about that makes me sick.
Yeah.
Really makes me sick to think that we funded the murder of Allende in Chile, 1973. I was so sick, all I did the next day was paint a picture of all the forces I thought that had connived to bring about the destruction of that democratically elected government. And then we talk about democracy. That's a real issue. 70,000 people have been killed in Guatemala. What you would call human rights violations. 70,000 people in the last 7 or 8 years. Same thing in El Salvador. It's
all over the world.
And we have trained those people. We call it low intensity warfare. And my wife got a hold of this article on low intensity warfare. So she was holding a session here back in 85. Several people walked out because they thought she was a communist, I think, because she was raising a question about that low-intensity warfare supported by our country. Anybody else?
Pretty hard there to get the true picture through the newspaper. It's very difficult to know who to believe if we read the newspaper.
Well, you know, the thing that disillusioned me was Halberstam's book on the best and brightest about the Vietnam War. And when what his book points out is that the best and the brightest in the United States were taken in by the way in which Johnson brought that war off on a hoax. I mean, who just lied to us and built up the whole incident of Tonkin Bay, which was an incident that was created in order to give him the right or the political clout to send our army in.
That's right, but the rank and file don't read that book.
No, all I'm saying is even the best and the brightest of us are taken in. It's a very, I was just supporting your point, it's a very complex thing, to get the truth about what's going on. That's why you can't just depend on a newspaper.
Another book on the same issue is A Bright Shining Lie. I forget the author. About the Vietnam War.
Well, unless somebody else has something that he or she, some real illuminating insight. Go ahead.
Our government, I wouldn't want to be quoted on these statistics, but almost every country in the world gets foreign aid from us, and so much of it we don't have any control over. It goes into these countries, and I think they're perpetrating against human rights violations.
Yeah, that's partly true. But it's also true that we put strings attached. And that many of the foreign aid gifts we give, we say you've got to buy in the United States. And we put all kinds of strings attached to foreign aid, and the other countries are doing the same thing. So, well, now I'm leaving this all for Barbara to solve tomorrow with the parables. What are the parables saying about all this stuff? All right. Have a good supper. And
thank you.
See you tomorrow. Thank you.